Hello and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Anne Aries.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about not a specific food in particular, but rather a system of eating.
A system of eating, yes. Three meals a day.
Why do we do that?
Why? It's, well, there's a lot of reasons why. So in the U.S., and I think most Western countries, it's three square meals a day.
That's the rule. That's it.
Yep, that's it. And if, listeners, you have a different eating frequency, please write in and let us know. From what I read online, several countries have four meals, the fourth being a smaller mid-afternoon snack.
Mm-hmm. As some kind of tea time almost kind of shtick, sure.
Yeah. Some cultures do a big breakfast, some a big lunch. In the U.S., I would say our big meal is dinner or supper.
Mm-hmm.
Depending. What word do you use for that?
Dinner. But my family, my mother's side of the family in Ohio would have said dinner for lunch and supper for dinner.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ooh. I think we mostly use dinner, but supper also meant the same thing. You could use either interchangeably. We'll be talking about that.
But you didn't use the word dinner for lunch.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
It meant the same meal. My mom was pretty Southern, and she would say supper.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. I'm really bad at a Southern accent, so I'm glad that worked out.
That did. Annie, y'all couldn't see, but Annie just, like, grew this gorgeous, amazing feathered hat as she said that word.
I did. It's one of my many skills. And I got to thinking about this recently when I was anxiously waiting for 6 p.m. because I have strict rules. Lunch is no earlier than noon, and dinner is no earlier than 6 p.m. In fact, people have commented on this in the office because they'll hear my stomach making so much sound, like at 11:30, and they say, well, why don't you come with us and get lunch? And I'm like, nope, gotta wait.
Not until noon.
12 p.m., because otherwise, by the time 6 p.m. comes around, I'm going to be so hungry. But it sounds ridiculous already. This is one of the reasons we're looking into it. Also, I eat three meals a day, hungry or not hungry, three meals a day. And I started wondering if this was just routine based on my part, on all of our parts, or if there's some general body thing going on, whereas like a certain amount of time passes and this is generally when you should be hungry again. So that's kind of why we're talking about this today.
Do you snack in between meals at all? Do you allow yourself snacks?
Oh, never.
Oh,
never.
Really?
Oh, my gosh, no.
Oh, wow.
That is a big forbidden. No snacks. Never.
See, I go about my eating habits I either eat about two meals a day, like a lunch and a dinner, with maybe a snack in between, but maybe not. Or I just graze throughout the day.
Like an antelope on a safari.
Yeah, with maybe like a main dinner meal that's more of a social function.
Mm-hmm.
But, note, three meals a day was also a South Korean reality TV show about people and guest celebrities using what they could grow, catch, and forage in a small fishing village to make three meals a day, 3 days a week.
Oh, fun note.
Yeah. But yeah, we're mostly, it's the first thing that came up when I Googled it. And so I was just like, oh.
Might as well include this.
There you go. But yeah, we're mostly talking today about Europe and North America in this particular episode because, yes, it is fascinating to us how ingrained this concept is.
Yes. And if you stop and think about how many things these meals influence, breakfast, lunch, dinner, it influences weddings, dates, work days.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of bizarre when you think about
it. It's sort of the structure.
Yeah.
Of our days.
It really is. I spend most of my day thinking about the next meal. Is that a good time? A good way to spend your days? I don't know. And while it's been a hard and fast rule, those blasted millennials are moving away from it, which equates to substantial gains in the packaged snack market in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And at 2017, 14.2% of Americans were eating five or more snacks a day. And the largest consumer push seems to be high-protein snacks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. More and more people are foregoing breakfast entirely, about 15%. And the snacking industry has excellent corporate terminology, like core snacking. macro snacks.
Macro snacks.
Micro snacks. I want to do a whole thing just about this terminology.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
And for the McDonald's fact of the episode, it's been a while, but here's one. After launching all-day breakfast in Canada, largely in response to request of millennial customers, the company released this statement. Canadians want to enjoy breakfast when they want to, without the constraints of time. The attitude was all me. That's just how I read it. If we want fast food breakfast at 10 p.m., then gosh darn it! We're not going to let your rules get in the way. A&W came out with a similar stance in Canada that same year, the president saying, the response was tremendous, particularly from millennials, and we know that breakfast is something Canadians don't limit to just the morning.
I was so excited when so many fast food places started releasing breakfast all day menus.
Yes.
Because I don't go to them very often, but when I do, and it's like 11 o'clock at night.
And sometimes you want a hash brown.
Sometimes you want a hash brown. Man, sometimes you want a hash brown.
Mm-hmm. We've all been there.
Yeah. This is an etymology-heavy episode, which I hope you're as excited about as we are.
Yes.
First up, and as a sort of clue to how things are going to progress here, let's talk about the word meal.
Yes, let's.
Before I dug into this research, I had guessed that the times we eat meals and the ground-up grains meals, your corn meals, your oatmeals, came from the same root and, like, indicated the importance of these grains to our ancestors' diets.
Makes sense, yeah.
Sure. But they're actually from two totally different root words. The grain meal comes from the Proto-Indo-European root malay, meaning crush or grind. And this meaning has been around sort of forever.
Wow.
The eating time meal didn't come about until the 1200s or so, 1200 CE or so, from the pi root mi, meaning measure, through the Germanic slash Viking slash Frisian word meal, meaning a measure of time or an appointed time. The 1200s are when this began to apply exclusively to first special occasions where you gather and eat, and then to any eating occasion.
And a note from me, when Lauren said pie earlier, it was not about the delicious baked dessert.
Oh, no, that's a abbreviation for Proto-Indo-European.
I'm sure our listeners were probably totally on board and knew that, but I was like, pie? Wow. I didn't know it had such roots in our mealtime.
Yeah, Proto-Indo-European is a language that's lost, but that seems to have branched out into both Germanic and Latin languages.
Yes.
So.
Just wanted to clarify in case there's any pie lovers like me out there that hear pie and just stop listening to anything else.
Understandable.
Yes. And this may seem obvious, but this whole meal thing, like three meals a day, is kind of weird and unnatural when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
As we're eating at these specified times instead of when we're hungry. Or, yeah, and a clarification here is not bored.
Not bored, but actually hungry.
Yes. Stomach growling. I am hungry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Low blood sugar. Whole thing. Yeah.
Right. So why do we do it? We'll get into that after a quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
The short answer of where the three meals a day comes from is a combination of industrialization, marketing, always, convenience, routine, and a touch of racism.
Oh.
Also always,
thanks,
almost.
Thanks, history.
Yeah. But let's unpack that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we look at breakfast, in the scheme of things, it's relatively new. In ancient Rome, it was tradition to eat one meal a day, typically around lunch. Any more than that, and people thought you were a glutton.
Oh, goodness.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons this midday meal was so big is light, as in daylight, sun.
Ah.
Yeah. Before electricity, people got up earlier to make the most of the daylight. And the work back then was more physical, meaning that by noon, you were probably famished. Sometimes you'd have a snack of bread and cheese called a beaver or a noonshine. But generally, it was this one meal around noontime. that was it.
Yeah. For an added terminology bonus, this middle of the meal day was called dinner, not lunch.
Right.
Or the Latin version of that. But it was technically the first meal of the day. The word dinner is rooted in the Latin for break one's fast, which, forgive my Latin pronunciation, it looks like desjunare.
Yeah.
So dinner originally meant breakfast and was eaten at lunchtime.
I hope you're not confused, because it gets even wilder terminology-wise in a little bit. If we skip ahead to the Middle Ages, religion informed appropriate eating times in Europe. No eating before morning mass, you heathen, and no meat for about half of the year.
Yeah.
Historians think the word breakfast first popped up around this time, meaning break the night's fast. Religion also gave us the full English breakfast, just a little side note. Pre-refrigeration, the day before Lent, you were going to eat up your pork, a lot of people had pigs, and your eggs. Again, no refrigeration, can't tell chickens to stop laying eggs, though in its earliest form, it was probably the English lunch or dinner. Ah.
Although, it's a quick side note about eggs, when you don't wash eggs industrially the way that we do here in the United States, you don't have to refrigerate them. We and a few other countries make farms wash eggs, which prevents potential spread of salmonella, but also washes away this protective oil or wax on the egg's shell that would act as a preservative.
Yeah.
That's why people from other countries keep their eggs out, and we look at them like they're weird, and they look at us like we're weird.
Yep.
Yeah.
First time I went to Europe, I was like, what is this?
What is this madness?
I don't understand. Don't they realize all of their eggs are out? But now I know. Now I'm enlightened to the way of the egg. Rich folks of the time had these huge, incredibly over-the-top, lavish dinners, which, again, was still around noontime because artificial light hadn't been invented yet, called Cenas.
Around this time, circa the 14th century CE, and with the advent of breakfast, dinner shifted to mean the day's main meal. Still, as in Roman times, it served around midday. Also around then, an evening meal came to be called supper, a loan from the French souper, meaning the same thing and probably coming from the word soupe.
Yeah.
Yeah, meaning broth, which roots from the Germanic sup, meaning to sip.
Oh, and obviously that's where soup probably came from. I say obviously, but who knows? It seems likely that is where it came from.
I believe you're correct.
Yes, but we won't know for sure until we get around to that soup episode.
Ooh.
In the meantime, we're going back to the 17th century. By then, breakfast was pretty commonplace in Europe, especially with the rich who started building breakfast rooms, of course.
Huh.
As we touched on in our brunch episode, hunting parties catapulted breakfast to new heights for the aristocracy. Huge meals, sometimes 24 courses, a lot of it meat.
Yes, a shocking amount of it meat.
Yeah. For the non-wealthy, breakfast typically consisted of leftovers from the previous lunch, dinner, what have you, meal. Mush, bread, cheese, anything that needed to be eaten up. Before the European settlers arrived to the Americas, indigenous peoples ate when they were hungry. The arriving colonists pointed to that as further reason the indigenous peoples were inferior in their minds because they, quote, grazed like animals do.
Oh.
That was the accounting from an English settler, as opposed to sticking to mealtime boundaries like civilized folk.
Geez, no corsets and no mealtimes. What are these people up to?
They're just living their lives without these boundaries. I don't understand. And though Europeans mocked Native Americans for their eating habits and might snidely call them gluttons, anthropologist of the time, Lewis Morgan, attested that Native Americans ate only about a fifth of what colonists did.
Oh, wow.
So they were eating less, even though they were eating more frequently. Bonus answer to another question I've always wondered. 1750s colonial Americans widely adopted meat for breakfast, meaning that people generally ate meat at every meal. At the time, two or three meals, depending on whether or not you added in the later in the day snack. Breakfast recipes of the time included fried veal liver, spare ribs, meatloaf, duck, turkey ragu. Meat became such an integral part of the meal that, according to one observer, a breakfast without such an addition is considered a scarcely worth eating.
Ooh.
I've wondered that for a long time. When did it become like a meal is not complete
without
meat? Rhymes. I think we're moving away from that, but I feel like that was a very big thing for my parents' generation. There was always meat involved.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And meat as part of breakfast was an even bigger thing when eating out, especially in the South. One quote I found from an Englishman advised, in stopping for breakfast in the southern states, you must never calculate on a detention of less than 2 hours, as your entertainers will prepare dishes of meat or poultry for you. And I read another account of a traveler stopping in Kentucky in a tavern, and he was hoping to get a quick breakfast of coffee. He specifically ordered only coffee because it needed to be quick. But at the insistence of the matron, birds were caught, feathers plucked, birds were roasted, ham pan fried, bread baked, and he was there for 2 hours. Times have changed in the U.S., man.
Oh, yeah.
Breakfast is like a hit-and-run meal.
yeah, whatever you can grab from either your counter or, I guess, like, pilfer from Starbucks on your way into your office.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. It's what you can find and eat while moving.
I will not eat my yogurt with a spoon. I shall only drink it. Void is 2018.
That is what we were promised in this future.
We don't have hoverboards, but we have drinkable yogurt.
I guess it's a kind of a success.
Sort of. I actually really hate drinkable yogurt.
Yeah, it's not for everyone, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And speaking of the future, after the Industrial Revolution and the introduction of the 9-to-5 workday, a midday meal, a.k.a. your lunch hour at work, the very beginnings of it, which now had to be a quick, casual, usually handheld thing. And then you had the end of workday meal at home. And so it was a home-cooked meal with your family, a.k.a. dinner. The family dinner specifically became the norm.
Ah.
Breakfast before you leave work. This rigid meal schedule traveled with European settlers to the New World. And with the introduction of artificial light, dinner, as in the big midday meal, shifted to later and later in the day, probably after work, after you got home from work. For a while, Sunday held on to the traditional noontime dinner, a.k.a. the precursor to Sunday brunch. And in the U.K., Sunday roast is still a thing, so I hear. As the world urbanized, mass-produced food became a necessity. There wasn't room for everyone to have a garden or their own livestock. Some people didn't even have kitchens. More terminology madness. The word lunch wasn't used at all until the 19th century.
Huh.
It may have come from an old Anglo-Saxon word, nuncheon, which denoted a quick-to-go type snack between meals in the 17th century. Like a sandwich, perhaps. Allegedly invented by the Earl of Sandwich in the 1750s so he could eat with one hand. Or it could be derived from nunch, a word that referred to a big chunk of bread in the 16th and 17th century. Either one.
Mysteries.
Yes.
Mysteries of history.
Industrialization increased the amount of wheat in the American diet since it was now easier to produce a higher quality, cheaper product. From 1830 to 1850, the wheat consumption of the average American went up by 20 pounds per year.
Ooh.
Yeah, the meat-to-wheat ratio flipped, and a lot of the sweet breakfast breads we eat now became more popular as a way to start your day. Then, at the beginning of the 20th century, we get John Kellogg. Yes, that John Kellogg.
Oh.
And cornflakes. Edward Bernays and bacon, as we talked about in the bacon episode. The marketing push for breakfast is the most important meal of the day in the 1920s and 30s to get people to buy more bacon and other breakfast foods. That always makes me think of the quote from Arrested Development. What do I always say is the most important thing? Breakfast. And then he's like, no, family. And George Michael says, oh, I thought you're talking about things that we eat. Anyway, this is just me. breakfast took a hit during World War II. But once the war was over and things like the toaster, sliced bread, and instant coffee became commonplace, breakfast came back in a big way. Another thing about the Industrial Revolution, jobs went from being mostly outdoors, active, physical, to mostly indoors, sedentary. People didn't change their food intake to reflect this change, however, especially when it came to breakfast. Doctors started sounding the alarm in the U.S. after patient complaint of indigestion grew to a really must have been high, high level because it was called a national case of indigestion.
Wow.
And that's when the idea of a lighter breakfast came in, which Kellogg capitalized on.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, it just took off from there. And another thing, we can't leave the television out of the conversation, not only as a way to advertise foods, but as key in perpetuating this idea of the family dinner.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Movies, television, commercials often featured this idea of the family meal. According to the BBC article about this I was reading, the family dinner is on the decline, and this decline began in 1986 with the first microwave meal.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The lighter breakfast thing is still trending, although these days breakfast cereals and other staples like orange juice are trending way down, like 30 to 40% down in the past couple decades.
Oof.
In favor of other carb-based products supplemented with a heavy dose of protein, like all those breakfast sandwiches and avocado toasts and protein bars and yogurt drinks.
Yep. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much why we have the three meals a day. It's routine and work day, I would say. Industrialization, routine, work day. But we are sort of moving away from it. I have a lot of friends that still only eat. They eat three meals a day no matter what.
No matter what, yeah, yeah. And I've got a lot of friends who alternately have tried all kinds of different diet plans, like specifically because they have they promise weight loss or exercise results based on eating more meals a day but smaller or the intermittent fasting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into a tiny bit of the science of that after one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. So, you asked earlier, Annie, if maybe like there was a certain like rhythm in our bodies, like, you know, these three times in a day that we're primed to eat.
Yeah, this and, amount of time passes and this is when you should be hungry.
Well, and it certainly is true that through your digestive system, your food moves about 6 to 8 hour intervals or so. That's about how long it takes for food to pass from your throat through, you know, your butt.
Yeah.
And depending on what you've got going on. And so having meals in about 6 to 8 hour intervals certainly does make a certain amount of sense. But whether or not eating three meals a day is good for you is one of those things that without doing a whole episode's worth of research on, is best summed up as our bodies are complicated and more research needs to be done.
The foodstuff motto.
and y'all, you've been calling for a fasting / ketogenic diet episode, and we hear you. It is on the list. That is not this section right now.
Yes.
Yes.
From what I read throughout the years and also specifically for this episode, kind of like brief overview, it doesn't seem to matter, at least current research suggests, it doesn't seem to matter at all how often you eat. Six meals a day versus three a day of the same calorie count, you're going to see the same results generally.
There is some evidence that eating too close to bedtime, say within an hour or two, will spike your blood sugar and insulin, which can lower your melatonin, which can make it harder to sleep.
Yeah.
But there is extremely weak evidence that breakfast is that most important meal of the day. There are lots of studies that have concluded all kinds of things about breakfast, fighting obesity and risk of heart disease, but reviews of these studies unfortunately show that they've been pretty heavily biased in their interpretations of their data and even misleading in their language about their data, thus like overstating their already kind of shaky conclusions. So, what's going on here?
Ooh.
Would you believe me if I said financial conflicts of interest?
Absolutely not. Could not be. It's got to be something else.
It's never happened in the food industry before.
Perhaps it's aliens? I don't know.
Major breakfast food industry players like Kellogg's and Quaker Oats help fund a lot of these studies. Mm. And while a biased funding source does not necessarily mean that the resulting research will be biased, it certainly is something to take into consideration.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't cover the other part of the breakfast debate, whether you need it for good, smart thought power.
Oh, man, my mom was such a believer in that. That's why I loved the big test days, because she would make, like, a big breakfast.
Ooh.
It was the best. Like, bacon and eggs and toast with butter and strawberries cut up.
Man.
And orange juice, a fresh squeeze. It was the best.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, I interrupted your scientific study.
No. That will certainly at least have, like, a psychological effect of, like,
yeah.
I'm willing to get up and go now.
I was pumped. I was like, ooh, CRCT day, breakfast.
Back on the science side, the problem with research in this area, because it does tend to, some research does tend to show that, you know, having students eating breakfast leads to better scholastic results.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with research in this area is that a lot of it is done with students and school breakfast programs. And unfortunately, it fails to consider the students' food security at home.
Right.
Because you have to keep in mind that sadly, 12 to 15% of American households are food insecure, meaning that they do not have enough access to food for all of their household members to live an active and healthy lifestyle. So if you're not considering what kids ate for dinner the previous night or whether they were able to eat dinner at all, you really can't judge the impact that eating breakfast at school has on their academic performance and their weight profile.
Right.
Which brings us to really the main point in the is breakfast healthy? Are three meals a day necessary kind of question, being that if you're hungry in the morning, or, you know, if you'll feel dull or sluggish or jittery if you don't eat, you should eat.
Mm.
And furthermore, you should be able to eat, but hunger is a separate episode for sure. I mean, also, you know, be careful with fasting, because fasting when you're hungry can lead to overeating later. So do watch out for that. You could be protecting yourself from overeating later in the day, Annie, with your
very strict
breakfast rule.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, like, if you're just not hungry in the morning, don't force yourself. And if you're looking for a particular weight or fat change and you're fasting in the morning because of that, and you also really want our take on that, stay tuned.
Yeah.
For another episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not this one. But basically, pay attention to your body. Not just your cravings, but also how you feel after you eat or do not eat. Keep a journal if you think that'd help. Try to eat some proteins and fruit or vegetables and, like, bits of fats and grains at all your meals. Or maybe balance those things throughout the day through snacking. Hydrate!
Always. Good.
Always hydrate.
Yeah.
And y'all take care of yourselves, okay?
Yeah, please do. Because you're all lovely.
You are.
It's so... That... So much of the science... Or the recommendations we get from these studies, they're just ubiquitous. Like,
that
eat breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere. If you want to lose weight, eat breakfast.
Eat breakfast, yeah.
And it's...
It's just really personal is the problem.
Yeah, it really is.
And these studies are frequently small. And like I said earlier, there's frequently various rigorosity issues with them. And so, you know, I know it's a less sexy answer. I know it's so much nicer to just be told, like, do this thing and it will work.
It is.
But it doesn't work for everybody. And so it's actually kind of a good thing in the long run, because I feel like I know I and lots of other people that I know get so frustrated about not being able to achieve whatever body type or result that they're looking for through these things that they're told will work or even are sold to work. And it's not always like that.
No. Yeah, I mean, it's annoying, too, when you have a friend doing one thing and you're doing the same thing and
it's not working
for you. but that is good. And I personally have used a food journal before and I found it really helpful. So anyway, that is why we have three meals a day.
And a little bit of the science about eating them like that.
Yeah. And we will. There's so much there. We have given ourselves quite the task, but
we
will tackle it.
We shall.
In the future.
Maybe we can get one of those fancy science experts on here about
that. Oh, yeah. That would be really
That'd be great. Helpful.
That'd be so good. Yes.
But this brings us to listener mail.
Ooh. Yeah. Yes. Never know. Never know how it's going to go. Sarah wrote, I was listening to your kale podcast and was horrified, all caps, that you didn't mention my number one best fun trivia fact and needed to immediately email you about it. I once read that prior to 2012, Pizza Hut was the largest commercial purchaser of kale because they used it to decorate the salad bars in their restaurants. I haven't been able to find any hard evidence to prove this fact, but I did send it into NPR's podcast, Ask Me Another, where they did a little research and featured it with my name. That was one of my proudest moments, so if you read this in a listener mail, it will be the second time this fact has gotten my name into a podcast I love, and this will be another of my proudest moments. Well, here you go, Sarah.
Congratulations!
Woo! There's
balloons.
And confetti.
Yeah.
We're sorry you're not here to see it.
Streamers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have heard that fact before, and when she emailed, I was like, oh, my gosh, yeah, totally forgot about that. I believe it. I believe that if it's not true, it is at least plausibly within the realm of truth.
Right, right. Or that it might have been true for one particular point in history.
Mm-hmm.
There's this intersecting graph in my head between, like kale consumption and Pizza Hut salad bar consumption.
I want to see this graph in real life.
They must cross at some point.
And now kale is probably a kale salad at Pizza Hut. I bet you there is.
Oh, goodness, there has to be.
At the salad bar. It's come so far. Off of the bar, into the bar. Congratulations. You made it.
You made it, kale.
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa wrote, I'm currently listening to the bonus episode for Salt. I've seen Susie Sheffield's Salt on a couple different websites and in magazines, and always wondered about the person and company who makes such fantastic and whimsical products. I also own a small business and dream of making it to the level beautiful Briny C has success-wise. I make candles, which, while not edible, listening to the interview, I realized Susie's method of coming up with blends is similar to how I've come up with a couple of my own signature scents. If you're interested, my company is called 22 in Maine. Many of them are also food-related and have fun names, too. I always feel awkward talking at my business, but the interview was a great kick in the pants as far as inspiration.
That's great to hear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you for writing in, Alyssa. If you guys, I don't know, if you guys make cool stuff, let us know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A lot of you make cool stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not that you don't already.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Just let us know about it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we love hearing all the stuff you're working on, mm-hmm. food-related or not. Please email us. You can do so at foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We're there at foodstuffhsw and on Instagram at foodstuff. We hope to hear from you. Thank you so much to our super producer, Dylan Fagan. Tip of the hat, sir. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.